I felt gratified by the urgency of these high school students. They had not been lulled by an education system that tries to divert them from critical issues by focusing on testing, homework, grades, college admissions, job searches, and the other forms of performance drama. They had not been anesthetized by television or immobilized by fear. These two young men had reached a profound understanding. They knew that their ability to live is what is at stake. They, not just their children or grandchildren, would be impacted by the horrible state of affairs my generation was leaving behind. They also realized that no solution will work unless it encompasses the entire world. And they believed that they can and will succeed. As I reread their email, I realized that the unifying principle must embrace their commitment to involve everyone in the community. It must encompass the principles advocated by the NGOs of social, environmental, and economic justice. It needs to take into account those five commonalities expressed by the University of Denver students. It has to honor the feminine insistence that children grow up feeling secure and nurtured. Instead of the moral or religious, it must emphasize the pragmatic, articulating a truly universal desire, shared by all men and women, and in fact, by all life forms. And it has to be simple, something everyone can commit to memory. I jotted words down on the back of that paper. The unifying principle is a commitment to creating a stable, sustainable, and peaceful world for all people everywhere. I was tempted to add something about recognizing that no child can inherit such a world unless all children do. However, this seemed self-evident. The same was for the idea of equitable. Then I thought about including plants, animals, and the environment, but decided that the words stable and sustainable address this. Best to keep it short and uncomplicated. We commit to creating a stable, sustainable, and peaceful world for all people everywhere. Until Denver and Seattle, I had thought of this as an important time in history. I now realized that the college and high school students and the veteran warriors who demanded an end to war, combined with all my conversations with people in the NGOs and ideas about turning imperialistic capitalism into democratic capitalism, had convinced me that this is the most important time in history. We know that our society is faltering, that we are exploited, that our leaders thrive on instability and inequality, and yet we have been taught to doubt that we really do know these things. Our hesitation is summed up in one question that is asked by someone at nearly every presentation I give. It is the single most important question before us today. Chapter 64. The Most Important Question of Our Time. Before I ask my question, I want to say that I agree with you. The woman standing at the center aisle microphone was probably in her late 30s or early 40s. She had flowing auburn hair and a pleasing smile that reminded me of Meryl Streep. In her sky blue blouse and beige slacks, she might have been a teacher, lawyer, artist, or housewife. To change the world, we must persuade corporations to change their goals. They have got to move from serving a few rich people to focusing on making better lives for the rest of us, as well as protecting the environments and communities where we all live. She smiled sweetly. I totally agree. By now, I was pretty sure I knew what was coming. She was about to ask the question that always came up. The question that haunted everyone. It was the final question on my list of the four we all must address. She placed both hands on her hips and gave me a rather defiant look. But what can I do, me personally, to make that happen? There it is, I said for my own ears. I cleared my throat. Thank you. Back when I first began my speaking tour, I wondered whether people have always asked this question. Or is it a unique characteristic of the post-Hitler, post-A-bomb, Vietnam, Watergate, 9/11, Iraq era? Have we always felt so small and helpless? Or just now? Attempting to figure this out, I often thought about my grandfather. He owned a small furniture business in rural New Hampshire during the Depression. He died before I was born, but I was raised in the shadow of his reputation. Legend held that he never made a major decision without agreement from his employees. He professed that his children could not live good lives unless the poorest members of his community lived good lives. Consequently, he dedicated himself to pulling that community out of the Depression. He and other businessmen chose not to use their savings to exploit the destitute by purchasing their homes and farms for a few cents on the dollar. Instead, they built an economy that offered jobs to the unemployed, to woodcutters, carpenters, street sweepers, plumbers, weavers, and upholsterers. My grandfather was never described to me as a good Samaritan. Rather, his legend was that of a wise man who understood that his as-yet-unborn grandson's future would be secure only if the futures of the grandchildren of those destitute farmers and laborers were also secure. I also thought about my father. I suppose he could have written Hitler off as a European despot. Killed a few million, so what? I'm not Jewish. I live across the Atlantic. I'm safe. He could have rationalized his way out of it. Or, as a language teacher, accepted a safe job as a trainer of translators. Instead, he volunteered for the Navy and headed up armed guard crews that manned the guns on merchant marine oil tankers crossing the Atlantic, an incredibly dangerous job. I thought about the suffragettes, union organizers, civil rights workers, anti-Vietnam protesters, the young girls who stuck flowers into rifle barrels, and the students who laid down in front of tanks in Moscow and Beijing. Those times seemed long gone, yet many of those activities happened during my adult life. Which got me thinking about now, and the men and women who lined the ground before bulldozers in the forests of Oregon, the Colombian farmers who chained themselves to fences to defy corporate mercenaries trying to force them off their lands, the athletes who refuse to play in sweatshop-made uniforms, those who sing, climb buildings to hang banners, write poetry, shop only at environmentally friendly and socially responsible co-ops or privately owned local stores, and the ones, like my daughter, who give up lucrative corporate careers to dedicate themselves to causes and lifestyles that offer more than money. They are doing all these things today. You know, I replied to the auburn-haired lady in the sky-blue blouse and beige slacks, I hear that question a lot, and I'm not sure why I hear it. You and I live in a country that prides itself on being a democracy, on taking action. I told the stories of my grandfather and my father. Please don't feel that you're alone, though. I looked around at my audience. How many share this woman's question? How many of you want to know what you can do to make things better? The room was a forest of hands. I turned to the woman. She gave me a relieved nod. Why do we feel so powerless? I asked her. Hint. The corporatocracy has a collaborator in taking away our power. Her brow wrinkled. Then she gave me that Meryl Streep smile. Us. Right. They can't take away our power unless we allow them to. She started to step away from the microphone, but thought better of it. So, I repeat, she said with a gentle smile. What can I do? Take back your power. And convince everyone you know to do the same. I looked from her to the rest of my audience. If you're tempted to say the problem's too big, the corporations and government too strong, I don't stand a chance, that's just a cop-out on your part. I paused to let this sink in. Thank God our forefathers back in the 1770s didn't say, Oh, the King of England? He's too powerful. I can't do anything about him. I told the audience, as I have told many others, that we today need to recognize that every one of the founding fathers and mothers stuck their heads in nooses. They stood against the most powerful empire in history, and it happened to be their own government. They were traitors, terrorists in the eyes of the crown. They faced hanging. Today we honor their courage, as we honor the courage of my father and other members of his generation who stopped Hitler. We honor their generosity, their willingness to make sacrifices. We, too, must be courageous and generous. We must be willing to pay more for diamonds and gold, laptops and cell phones, and insist that the miners receive fair wages, health care, and insurance. And we must pay more for goods that are not produced in sweatshops, but are made in places that treat their employees fairly. We must drive smaller, more fuel-efficient cars, cut back on total energy use and general consumption, and protect natural environments along with the diversity of species that inhabit them. It is imperative that we develop an awareness that every action we take and every product we buy impacts other people and the places where they live. Collectively, our lifestyles today determine the future our children and grandchildren will inherit. Like those who have gone before us, we must be willing to make sacrifices, including, if necessary, the ultimate sacrifice, to ensure that we leave our progeny a world that is at least as good as the one our parents gave to us. Individuals make a difference. I know it is easy to forget. The corporatocracy spends billions every year trying to convince us that we do not make a difference, except when we buy product A or brand B. But we all understand that people impact people. Remember the men and women at RAN, Amnesty, the Pachamama Alliance, Move On, and other similar organizations. Recall people who have impacted you personally. Growing up in rural New Hampshire, I had no idea that African Americans were forced to ride at the back of buses in some parts of the South, until a woman named Rosa Parks showed me. Lots of poison ivy grew around our house. We were oblivious to the fact that the DDT we sprayed to eradicate it also killed fish, birds, squirrels, and lots of other species, until Rachel Carson wrote Silent Spring. That book mushroomed into a global environmental movement. Eugene McCarthy started another movement, a political one, that brought down one of this nation's most powerful presidents, Lyndon Johnson. McCarthy never won the presidency, but he gets a lot of credit for ending the Vietnam War. Coretta and Martin Luther King Jr. taught us about the power of dreams. They broke through race barriers, not just here, but also in South Africa and so many other places. My father instilled in me a deep respect for the principles expressed in the Declaration of Independence. My mother encouraged me to write editorials for my high school newspaper and listened for hours as I rehearsed for the debate team. Without the encouragement of my parents, I would not be writing this book. I recited these things for my audience that night. Then I glanced at the woman who had stood at the microphone and was now back in her seat. "Do you have a job?" I asked. She nodded. "Are you willing to tell us what?" "I'm a teacher." "An amazingly privileged position," I said. "I had a third grade teacher, Mrs. Schneer, who empowered me to stand up to a schoolyard bully and then lectured me about always defending my beliefs as well as my body. My sophomore year in high school, an English teacher, Richard Davis, implanted in me the idea that the pen really is mightier than the sword. A year later, my history teacher, Jack Woodbury, assigned books that convinced me that the powerful are also vulnerable. Even monarchs, he would say, are people. Their hearts break like yours and mine. They bleed. They can be brought around or taken down." She walked slowly back to the microphone. The man at the front of the line bowed and yielded his position to her. "I guess I knew that," she said. "But sometimes it used to seem easier to forget it. Not anymore. I am a teacher. I will teach now. Truly teach." Chapter 65. Today is the day. We are tempted these days to ask for formulaic solutions. It is what the corporatocracy has taught us to do. Follow the dotted line. If you have a headache, take the white pill. For heartburn, the pink one. Never question authority. The teacher has all the answers. Or the priest, the politician, boss, CEO, president. formulaic solutions, our rigid adherence to prescribed approaches, anxiety over deviating from the norm. These preconditioned responses have swept us into deep trouble. We may flatter ourselves that we are a rational, science-based society. The sad truth is that we embrace the emperor's contention that he alone is privy to the answers. It is a lie. A friend of mine recently suffered a serious heart attack. After a triple bypass, he reported that, quote, "The doctor informed me that medical science couldn't prove my diet was the cause, but it was a real possibility. I changed my diet." Unquote. We are in a similar situation on a global scale. It is symbolic of these times that our government insists that we need absolute proof that climate change is caused by man-made carbon dioxide before rewriting our environmental laws. Absolute proof. From whom? Throughout history, men and women we now revere have questioned the status quo. We applaud people like Galileo, Joan of Arc, Molly Stark, Thomas Edison, Jonas Salk, Helen Keller, Gandhi, and the Dalai Lama. It is important to remember that all of these people were just that. People. They were individuals like you and me. They knew fear and courage, sorrow and joy. They may have accomplished extraordinary things, but every one of them also faced obstacles that must have appeared insurmountable at times. They experimented, persevered, and now we can say, succeeded. There are no formulaic solutions, but there are lots of women and men to inspire us. They fill the pages of this book. From a Sudanese brother and sister, to an indigenous man who became president of his country. From Peace Corps volunteers to founders of NGOs. From high school students to college professors, writers to filmmakers. They include people talking to their neighbors and one supporting local NPR stations. Glance around. They are everywhere. Look into the mirror. You are one of them. You make a difference. Every day. In one way or another, you impact the folks near you. The important thing is to be aware of this and then to set about doing it consciously, in positive ways that will make the world a better place. Each day, commit to creating a stable, sustainable, and peaceful world for all people everywhere. I tell my audiences, if you want me to map out a course of action for you, then you're asking me to do as the corporatocracy does. You don't want that. You have your own passions and talents, different from mine. There are, of course, certain steps we can take. These are simple things that we all know about. Doing as many of them as possible will help you feel good and will also head us toward a survivable future. A few examples. To do. When tempted to engage in retail therapy, instead jog, meditate, read, or find some other solution. Shop consciously if there is something you must have. Purchase items whose packaging, ingredients, and methods of production are sustainable and support life. Make everything you own last as long as possible. Purchase at consignment and thrift stores where everything is recycled. Protest against free trade agreements and sweatshops. Write letters telling Monsanto, De Beers, ExxonMobil, Adidas, Ford, GE, Coca-Cola, Walmart, and other labor exploiters and environment destroyers why you refuse to purchase from them. Write letters praising Home Depot, Kinko's, Citicorp, Starbucks, Whole Foods, and other companies that cooperate with RAN, Amnesty International, and other NGOs. Cut back on oil and gas consumption. Downsize your car, home, wardrobe, everything in your life. Send money to nonprofits, radio stations, and other organizations that promote just causes. Volunteer your time and energy to such organizations. Support local merchants. Encourage stores to buy from local growers, producers, and suppliers. Shop at your local farmers market. Drink tap water. Get the water company to do a better job if necessary, but avoid buying bottled water. Vote for enlightened school boards, commissions, ordinances, and politicians. Run for office. Insist that those who use your money, banks, pensions, mutual funds, companies, make socially and environmentally responsible investments. Speak out whenever forums present themselves. Volunteer to talk at your local school about your favorite subject, beekeeping, weaving, tennis, anything, and use it to challenge students, to wake them up. Discuss externalities, the costs of pollution, poor working conditions, public subsidies, corporate exemptions, and other environmental, social, and political factors that should be included in the prices we pay for goods and services but are not. Let people know that when we do not pay for these very real expenses, we rob future generations. Encourage taxes on externalities, higher prices for gas, clothes, electricity, etc., as long as the difference pays to right social and environmental wrongs. Offer study groups at local libraries, bookstores, churches, and clubs. See johnperkins.org for details. Expand this list and share it with everyone you know. All the items listed impact corporate and political leaders. To break the stranglehold this empire has on our planet, we must remove power from the seventh characteristic of empires, the emperor, the corporatocracy. Only through transforming their vehicles of control, the corporations, will we succeed in manifesting the world we wish to leave to our children. It is our right and our duty to demand that corporations become good citizens, that they desist from operating imperialistically, and that instead they embrace the laws of democracy. Let your actions, the ways you spend your money and cast your votes, send strong messages that those charged with running our organizations need to dedicate themselves to creating a stable, sustainable, and peaceful world. Are you asking me to pay more for my t-shirts, not shop at Walmart, to buy from places where unions drive the prices higher? These are questions I often hear, usually followed by, "I work hard. I've got kids. I can't afford to make such sacrifices." "I'm asking you," I respond, "not to sacrifice your children's futures. Make sure the brands you buy are made by environmentally and socially responsible companies. Walmart does not meet those criteria, at least not yet. Wear fewer t-shirts if necessary. Keep them longer. Remember, too, that sometimes you actually pay more for the sweatshop brands. Nike products aren't cheap. Be sure to let the good companies and stores know why you patronize them, and let the bad ones know why you don't." This last is critical. We must work together to send a new message across our planet. Those impacted by our actions need to hear our reasons and feel our passions. The corporatocracy prospers from deception and secrecy. We must expose their lies. Think of the stories of assassination and corruption you heard earlier, the ones that made your skin crawl. When you do not shop and live consciously, you ensure that these stories will continue to unfold. You support the EHMs and jackals. As a boy growing up in New Hampshire, I wished that I had been born in the 1700s so I could have participated in the revolution. Now I give thanks that I am alive today. I know that you and I have launched ourselves on perhaps the greatest adventure our country has ever known, and one of the most exciting in world history. I like to make a special appeal to people over 50 years old. "Many of you no longer need to worry about being fired," I say. "Your children have left the nest. So this is your time to make a real difference. Stick your neck out. Mentor the young. Shake up the boardrooms. Take action and enjoy it." And to the young I say, "Some of you can work for corporations and inspire change from within. Others will only be corrupted by the process and should instead work from the outside, for NGOs or other such organizations. You alone know what is best for you. Above all, understand that success is not defined by the size of your house or by cars and yachts. It comes when you feel good about yourself." I encourage everyone to join activist organizations. Throughout our history, civil movements, like the Sons of Liberty during the American Revolution, have been essential to our democracy. Never have they been more needed than today. You can find organizations on the internet by searching for words that describe your deepest passions and deciding which most appeal to you. Participate in their email campaigns, rallies, and demonstrations. Donate $10 or $10,000. Volunteer to answer telephones. Or simply get yourself added to their lists. Be counted and commit to learning more. We possess all the resources we need for a world that is stable, sustainable, and peaceful. The corporatocracy has provided them for us. The education, communications, financial and transportation networks, the minerals and other resources, the scientific information and technological advances are here to serve us. We can save future children from dying of hunger and disease, provide basic amenities, close the gap between poor and wealthy, and we can see to it that the corporations pay their fair share to the communities where they operate. But the key is that you and I have to stand up and be counted. In addition to deception and secrecy, the corporatocracy thrives on lethargy. It counts on us to remain passive, to accept its advertisements as gospel, to buy unconsciously and allow it to continue destroying our planet. This must stop. Every one of us must shake ourselves awake. Taking action is the only way to ensure that our children and grandchildren, our nieces and nephews, and their children will inherit a world that is not torn apart in hatred and suffering, not ravaged by war and terrorism. You personally have a great deal of power. It is essential that you allow your passions to rise up, channel them in ways that complement your talents, and take action. The course you choose must come from your heart, not from the dictates of anyone else. You simply need to step forward. Am I optimistic? Absolutely. How can I not be, given what I know about the thousands of organizations that are successfully fomenting change? All the people working for corporations who want an excuse to do the right thing, and the millions of unsung heroes who donate their time or money to good causes. How can I be anything other than optimistic, given what I know about the power you and I have? Over the past 100 years, we Americans have pledged ourselves to what we called progress. We visualized huge cities where automobiles replaced horses, and electricity lit our homes, and ran mammoth factories, and where we could enjoy fresh produce in the middle of a northern winter. We applied ourselves to tasks aimed at realizing these and similar visions every day. We talked about our dreams and produced books, movies, and TV shows glorifying them. We encouraged everyone to join in this process. Caught up in it, we became so preoccupied that we allowed a few men to exploit us and the world. They dreamed of empire, and they used their media networks to convince us that their empire was a democracy, a champion of the oppressed, a promoter of a healthy planet. Subtly, without us noticing, our vision was transformed into a sort of nightmare. We allowed it to happen, and we can reverse it. Our true vision, we now realize, was about pulling ourselves out of poverty, living healthier, more dignified lives. Wanting to rid ourselves of the pollution caused by streets jammed with horses and buildings that lacked sanitation systems. Desiring greater comfort and more nutritious diets. We embraced visions that appeared to satisfy our needs, and did for a while. Now we see that we were duped by the corporatocracy into employing methods that were selfish and destructive. The visions they foisted on us excluded billions of people. They damaged habitats and the species living in them. They threaten us, our offspring, and the very survival of the planet as we know it. Today, our country exhibits all seven of those characteristics of an empire that were defined in the prologue of this book. This is not what we intended. It is not what we want. It is, in fact, contrary to our most basic beliefs. We desire something more important than materialistic consumption and the comforts afforded by our modern cities, cars, factories, and shopping malls. Our dream is about life. It is about enjoying peace, stability, and a sustainable planet. About adults dedicated to passing the ideals we most cherish on to our children. One of those children recently identified the essence of both the problem we humans have created and the solution to that problem. Sayer Allen Herrick heard my graduation address to her school, Hartsbrook High School in Hadley, Massachusetts, in 2006, during her junior year. The next fall, she wrote the following essay. I saw the entire world for the first time in second grade, laid out on a paper map. The ocean was blue and the countries were yellow, green, and pink. This way of looking at our planet has shaped the perceptions of people for hundreds of years. Just once, I would like to catch a glimpse of the world free from any human perception except my own, to see our globe suspended in dark space the way it must look from the window of a shuttle. I want to see that the borders and names imprinted on maps are our own creation. In recognizing the impermanence of the man-made boundaries that separate us, we can reveal how truly united we all are on this planet. What we have been shown or told to be true can stay with us forever. Yet I think it is our task as an evolving world community to take even the most fundamental preconceptions, recognize them for what they are, and realize their impact on us. Only then can we begin to take the actions necessary for the survival of future generations. The hour has now arrived for us to take those actions. We have acquired everything we need to realize a new vision. All the resources, the networks, and systems are in place. In recent years, we have also found that we have the will. We, you and I, possess the necessary tools. Today is the day for us to begin to truly change the world. This is Jonathan Davis. We hope that you've enjoyed this production of The Secret History of the American Empire. This program was executive produced by Patty Peruse and produced and directed by Kevin Thompson. The Secret History of the American Empire is a production of Penguin Audio, a member of Penguin Group USA Incorporated. Copyright 2007. All rights reserved. The book, The Secret History of the American Empire, is available wherever Dutton books are sold.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program. Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.